remember the day that I heard that Gwen's body had been found.
The name Gwen was completely kept out of coverage.
I knew that I had to step out of whatever comfort place I had been in.
This was not the first hate crime in Newark.
How can I stand by while a child is murdered in our town?
Where young people could kill someone rather than admit they had had sex with a transgender person.
Gwen Araujo's death was not an isolated incident.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Canada's Supreme Court finds anti-marriage conservatives unappealing, but Bush jumps on the right-wing U.S. marriage protection bandwagon, and a trans teen's murder transforms a small California community. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 11th, 2003. A panel of the Supreme Court of Canada this week unanimously denied religious conservative groups the chance to challenge the June decision by Ontario's top provincial court that opened legal marriage to gay and lesbian couples. The conservative groups, the Association for Marriage and the Family in Ontario, and the Interfaith Coalition on Marriage and Family, argued that the marriage issue is too profound to be determined by lower courts or even by a parliament that's almost equally divided. The Canadian government had chosen not to appeal the Ontario finding that denying marriage to same-gender couples violates the National Charter of Rights and Freedoms. The government also opposed the Conservatives' move to appeal, as did the victorious plaintiffs in Ontario, seven same-gender couples, and Toronto's gay-affirming Metropolitan Community Church. The five-judge panel of Canada's highest court did not justify its rejection of the Conservatives' bid, which is typical for such decisions. But during oral arguments, it was clear the justices were holding to the principle that only the parties involved in a case have standing to appeal its outcome. That means that both the Ontario court's order that the province immediately register gay and lesbian marriages and a similar ruling by British Columbia's top provincial court will stand unchallenged. In April, the Supreme Court of Canada will review the national government's draft bill to change the federal definition of marriage from one man and one woman to two persons.
But U.S. President George W. Bush has officially declared October 12th through 18th to be Marriage Protection Week, with a proclamation that begins, "Marriage is a sacred institution," and goes on to say, "Marriage is a union between a man and a woman." Much of the text refers to child rearing, including the claim that research has shown that, on average, children raised in households headed by married parents fare better than children who grow up in other family structures. But what's alarming gay and lesbian activists even more than the proclamation's text is the origin of Marriage Protection Week. It's a campaign by two dozen religious right groups that make up a veritable who's who of U.S. anti-gay lobbyists. As announced by those groups at a press conference last week, Marriage Protection Week is the kickoff of a year-long campaign to make prohibiting legal recognition of same-gender couples a top issue for the 2004 elections. That's expected to get out the right-wing vote in stronger numbers than in 2000. Along with a media blitz and church-based actions, the Family Research Council will be demanding that political candidates pledge their commitment to the goal of the uniting of persons of the same or opposite sex in a civil union, domestic partnership, or other similar relationship shall not be valid or recognized with any legal benefits or privileges in the United States. Most national gay and lesbian advocacy groups issued statements exemplified by Human Rights Campaign head Elizabeth Birches. It is reprehensible for a president who claims to be compassionate to pander to a coalition of extremist groups by joining their assault on gay families. GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, called on media to scrutinize President Bush's endorsement of anti-gay organizations' so-called Marriage Protection Week and examine the hateful intolerance of the groups with which the president has now formally aligned his administration.
U.S. opponents of gay and lesbian marriage can rest a little easier, at least in Arizona, where the State Court of Appeals this week declared that neither the state constitution nor the U.S. Constitution includes a right to marry someone of the same gender. In the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court's Lawrence decision that decriminalized private homosexual acts between consenting adults, a gay male couple in Phoenix sought a marriage license and filed a lawsuit when they were denied it. Like most other U.S. states, Arizona has a law explicitly excluding same-gender couples from marriage. In what's believed to be the first court ruling on gay and lesbian marriage rights since Lawrence, the Arizona triumvirate declared that while a gay or lesbian has a right to define his or her own existence and achieve the type of individual fulfillment that is a hallmark of a free society, the U.S. High Court did not intend to ratify a right to enter a state-sanctioned same-sex marriage. The Arizona appellate decision upheld the state's exclusive marriage law as a valid public policy meant to encourage childbearing. A further appeal to the state Supreme Court is expected.
U.S. Anglicans, the Episcopalians, continue their own struggle with recognizing gay and lesbian couples, particularly the election of openly partnered gay Gene Robinson to serve as Bishop of New Hampshire. Conservatives who opposed Robinson's elevation and the Episcopalian National Assembly's opening the door to church blessings for same-gender couples gathered in Dallas, Texas this week to plan their response. The 2,700 delegates included representatives from every state. They developed a petition to be presented to next week's emergency summit of the Global Anglican Communion's primates. It calls for disciplinary action against gay-friendly Episcopal bishops, appointment of conservative bishops to replace liberal ones in leading traditionalist congregations, and a realignment of Anglicanism in North America. The Episcopal Church's gay-supportive presiding bishop, Frank Griswold, acknowledged the conservatives' grief and anger, but said their inflammatory rhetoric and ultimatums would make it hard to create any mutual agreement.
As if the dissension among Anglicans weren't headache enough for Archbishop of Canterbury Rowan Williams, he also had to hear criticism from Roman Catholic Pope John Paul II. Williams was making his first visit to the Vatican since ascending to the leadership of the Global Anglican Communion. The two faiths are in the midst of a long-term plan for increased cooperation, but the pontiff warned that Anglican acceptance of gay clergy would pose new and serious difficulties on the path to unity. The Pope continued, "These difficulties are not all of a merely disciplinary nature. Some extend to essential matters of faith and morals."
Back at Williams' home base in London, the Gay and Lesbian Direct Action Group Outrage picketed the consecration of two new Anglican bishops at Westminster Abbey. There would have been a third bishop consecrated, openly celibate gay Geoffrey John, had he not withdrawn from his appointment in the face of evangelical opposition. The demonstrators chanted, "Shame, shame," while brandishing posters, including one reading, "Williams is a coward." Also, as the Church of England's bishops met this week, they spent one of their 2 days together in a closed session designed expressly to heal the breach that formed between the staunch opponents and the staunch supporters of John's elevation.
But nothing can top the Russian Orthodox Church response to its first ever gay wedding rite last month. Meeting this week, the Church's Holy Synod determined to defrock the priest who officiated, Father Vladimir Ennert. They also barred from performing services the accomplice in blasphemy who unwittingly provided a reporter with the key to the chapel, Father Mikhail Kabanov. On top of that, the chapel where the wedding was held has been demolished. The Nizhny Novgorod diocese denies that the razing was a reaction to the wedding, claiming it was long-planned preparation for building a new church on the site in 2005. Also in Russia this month, lesbian couple Natalia and Ulyana, their last names withheld, applied for and were denied a marriage license in Vologda.
Returning to the Vatican, a leader of the Roman Catholic offensive against gay and lesbian marriage, Pontifical Council for the Family head Cardinal Alfonso Lopez Trujillo, has declared to the BBC that condoms are not effective in preventing transmission of HIV. This public appearance brought to light that Catholic workers in Africa and on three other continents have been spreading the same message, that the virus and even the much larger spermatozoa are small enough to easily pass through a condom. The World Health Organization leaped to the defense of condoms, claiming that as long as they're intact, fresh enough, and used properly, they do indeed stop HIV and other sexually transmitted disease pathogens. Cardinal Trujillo simply rejected scientific data that was presented to him on the BBC, relying instead on the physicians he said advised the Vatican. The Roman Catholic Church has always opposed condoms as a method of birth control and maintains that they encourage promiscuity. But now the church seems to actually be blaming condoms for the spread of AIDS. Trujillo called on health ministries to treat condoms in the same way as they do with regard to cigarettes, which they state to be a danger.
And finally, it was a big gay week on British television. Open lesbian singer Alex Parks took the lion's share of 4.5 million viewer votes to win the Fame Academy contest, a recording contract, and a slew of luxurious prizes. Andrew Kinlochen, who joined other losing finalists in the Pop Stars TV music contest to form the boy band Fix, publicly identified himself as a gay man in an interview with Attitude magazine, and perhaps gave a boost to the group's first album, hitting stores later this month. But of course, the big news was the first ever gay male kiss in the 43 years of the soap opera Coronation Street, the beginning of what producers promise will be an ongoing storyline for young Todd Grimshaw, and not just a one-shot ratings grab. Almost 14 million people watched the much-ballyhooed smooch, giving ITV's Channel 1 a whopping 54.7% audience share. Even though the osculation aired before the 9 p.m. watershed for adult content, it drew only 16 complaints. A Coronation Street spokesperson said the show receives lots more complaints than that when a character swears.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 11th, 2003. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Will Islam ever make peace with homosexuality? Social anthropologist Dr. James Wafer addresses that compelling subject in the conclusion of his conversation with Michael Schembri. Next time on This Way Out.
Hello, this is Judy Shepherd, the executive director of the Matthew Shepherd Foundation and the mother of Matthew Shepherd. And you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
Anti-queer violence continues at an alarming rate, despite the progress the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community seems to be making towards equality and acceptance. As the fifth anniversary of the brutal gay-bashing murder of Wyoming college student Matthew Shepherd is commemorated this week, three more men have been arrested in yet another horrific homophobic beating death 2 years ago in Vancouver, British Columbia, of Aaron Webster. Meanwhile, the people of Newark, California, have a bitter anniversary of their own to acknowledge. Last October, a group of young men there savagely assaulted and strangled a 17-year-old transgender teenager named Gwen Araujo. Newark, a town of about 40,000, some 30 miles south of San Francisco, faced the scrutiny of the national news media, and transgender issues briefly found the spotlight. To find out if and how things have changed in Newark a year later, here's This Way Out correspondent Noah Miller.
At the beginning of last school year, if you had asked Kate Linus where she would be in 12 months, she would have said anywhere but Newark.
I probably would have said that I thought I would be in a different country studying or somewhere far away as possible.
It was her senior year. She was the new drama club president, and Newark Memorial High School was getting ready to put on the Laramie Project, a play about how the town of Laramie, Wyoming, reacted to the hate crime murder of Matthew Shepherd, a gay college student. It was exciting to do a play that was taken straight from real life. Then, early into rehearsals, one of the actors confided that she was worried.
She mentioned to us that one of her friends she had known was missing, and he happened to be gay. Well, she said he happened to be gay. At that time, nobody even called him transgender. Everybody even involved closely in it were so uneducated, even at that time, that we didn't even use those words. We knew that it was possible that something like Matthew Shepherd could happen, but I don't think it was ever really real until the newspaper came out with the finding of the body, and then it was just kind of day by day more things were coming out.
Gwen Araujo was murdered on October 3rd, 2002, when the men she was partying with discovered she was biologically male. The men beat her in the head and strangled her with a rope, and then drove 150 miles to dump her body by a campsite in California's Sierra Nevada foothills. There were several witnesses, but for 2 weeks, nobody said anything. Finally, one of the men led police to the body.
The news broke the evening of October 17th. The Associated Press, four arrested in murder of boy who lived as a girl. Missing teen Eddie Araujo has been missing for 2 weeks, but police believe...
Gwendolyn Ann Smith is the founder of the Remembering Our Dead Project, which brings attention to anti-transgender violence. So when the news broke about the murder of Gwen Araujo, she followed the media's coverage, and in her view, that coverage was by and large disrespectful and sensationalistic. Instead of referring to the teenager as her and she, news reports used male pronouns and the male birth name, Eddie.
Especially in the early coverage, the name Gwen was completely kept out of coverage. A lot of outlets still use quotes around her name, in spite of how she identified, in spite of how she was living her life, and in spite of what the people around her would use.
A year now has passed, and we've seen much improvement, much better coverage.
Eddie Gutierrez has also been paying attention to the Gwen Araujo story. He works with GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, which advocates fair, accurate, and inclusive representation of LGBT people. He says the media often cover transgender people in a way that transgender people don't like.
We made every effort to kind of say, look, you know, shame on the reporters that they continue to use inappropriate pronouns and that use quotation marks as if their identity and their gender identity is not real. That's something that angers us. And when we make these calls, we make that one of our first messages that we send to them. Like, look, this is clearly inappropriate.
This newsroom at the San Jose Mercury News has been the center of the controversy over how Gwen Araujo's story should be covered. The Mercury News is the paper of Silicon Valley, and it's Newark's major paper, too. So it was frustrating to the transgender community when the Mercury News went along with the rest of the media referring to Gwen as a boy. Dave Tepps is the deputy managing editor of the paper. He says, here's how they approached transgender subjects a year ago.
We wouldn't refer to somebody by a different gender than their birth unless they had already had a medical procedure, like surgery or hormone treatment, to change their gender.
This approach to gender troubles transgender advocates who argue that it's inaccurate, that many people live in a gender different from their birth sex without modifying their anatomy. Also, they argue it's impractical and intrusive. How is a paper like the Mercury News supposed to ascertain every transgender subject's medical history? Similar concerns led the Associated Press to move away from the body modification standard in 2000 and go instead with whatever gender a person prefers. So, covering the Newark murder, after some initial confusion, the AP ended up using the name Gwen and female pronouns. The Mercury News, on the other hand, stuck to the body modification rule, first calling the victim Eddie and later adding Gwen, but in quotes. LGBT community leaders in Newark were frustrated. They got to the point where they refused to give interviews to Mercury News reporters until the paper changed. Finally, in time for the first anniversary of Gwen Araujo's death, the Mercury News revised its style guide. Dave Tepps says he feels good about the change, though he doesn't mention it was a year in the making.
The more we looked into it, the more it seemed clear that Araujo carried herself as a woman, presented herself as a woman, lived that way, and so we decided to change the policy. And I haven't heard a word of protest. You know, I mean, there's some negative feedback from the staff that we took a politically correct stance. You know, like overly politically correct. But I think most people feel very confident that we made a good decision.
It's 5:30 on a Thursday afternoon, and three people are making their way from Newark City Hall across the street to the home of Livia Thomas.
Well, they provide an excellent forum to bring all these concerns to, because they can organize.
All right, you do have to take your shoes off.
Inside the cozy flat, books of poetry and queer studies lined the walls, along with Ms. Thomas's second grade school desk from Paris, Texas.
Such a cute little rocking chair.
It was my grandmother's.
The three have just come from a meeting with two assistant city managers. It was the first meeting between the city and their group, not in Newark, about making some concrete changes in the way Newark treats lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people.
I'm Livia Thomas. I'm a school teacher, elementary school teacher in the neighboring community of Fremont. I'm a lesbian, and I'm a Newark resident. I bought my home here 4 years ago, and it is my home.
Well, I'm Pat Skillen. I'm a mom. I happen to be the president of PFLAG at this time. And I'm one of those activists that comes in from the across the hills to take and disturb things in this area.
My name's Paul Clifford, and I've lived here in Newark for 14 years now. You know, this was not the first hate crime in Newark. There was a pattern, a persistent pattern of harassment of gay and lesbian adults and kids. When PFLAG first started here in Newark, that's parents, families, and friends of lesbians and gays, there was an attitude of hostility by some school board members. For example, one of the school board members would go to the gay and lesbian prom in Hayward to shout slogans and harass the kids going into the prom. Issues related to sexual minorities or gender minorities were taboo subjects. They could not be brought up in city council meetings, at school board meetings. They were, you know, those issues were not welcome. All that changed a year ago with two events. The first was the showing of the Laramie Project by Newark Memorial High School. And before the Laramie Project opened, Gwen Araujo, a 17-year-old, was murdered right here in Newark, just half a block from where we're sitting right now.
A year ago, I very comfortably was not an officer in PFLAG. I answered the helpline, and I came to meetings, and I was the mom. I think my whole life changed.
I remember the day that I heard that Gwen's body had been found. And I knew that I had to step out of whatever comfort place I had been in. I mean, how can I, as an elementary school teacher, as a human being on this planet Earth, stand by while a child is murdered in our town?
There had to be something that we could do to make this community take and look at itself in the mirror. The environment where young people could kill someone rather than admit they had had sex with a transgender person. The community has to accept some responsibility for having that kind of climate, that kind of lack of education within their community.
The city of Newark held a community forum in December to start discussing these issues. At the forum, Paul Clifford, Livia Thomas, and Pat Skillen connected with other people who felt that something tangible had to be done. People like Kate Linus, the high school drama club president, and teachers at the school. They started to meet as a group, and in May of this year, they named themselves Not in Newark.
Some of the steps that have been taken have been to work within the community, and that means the police department, the city council, the superintendent of schools, and the school board. We presented a proposal to the city council about a week ago, 5 different suggestions which we hoped the city would consider in order to make this a better, safer place for the whole community.
Those recommendations include forming a Newark Human Rights Commission, protecting gender and sexual minorities from housing and job discrimination, and bringing Newark schools into compliance with the California Student Safety and Violence Prevention Act of 2000, which outlaws harassment of LGBT students at school. Livia Thomas says she's inspired by the courage she sees around her.
I've gotten to know the students at Newark Memorial who have been brave enough to stand up, both gay, lesbian, and straight students who have been brave enough to stand up in the face of all this. How could I not? How could we not? As a group, as PFLAG, how could we sit in our homes and close our doors? I couldn't.
What has happened is that a group of people got together from all walks of life, from all professions, from vastly different ethnic backgrounds, and they've dedicated themselves to really making this a safer place. And they've put in a lot of work to do it. They're sticking their heads out and being counted in ways that are uncomfortable. But there they are doing that. And when I see them doing that, I'm so grateful and I'm so proud of them. It's awesome. And it's going to be a long struggle. There's a lot to do yet. You know, it's a very mixed bag. But it won't be always a mixed bag. You know, someday this issue won't be an issue. No one will care because there's no problem anymore.
If the outlook for Newark is a mixed bag, the situation for transgender people in the United States as a whole certainly is. Gwendolyn Ann Smith.
Gwen Araujo's death was not an isolated incident. Since her passing, there have been 34 other murders, 17 of those in the United States. Bella and Imani in D.C., Nikki Nicholas, Tamara Michaels, both were found murdered up in Michigan. There was
even as the number of reported anti-transgender killings has risen over the last year, transgender rights have progressed around the U.S. Hawaii enacted a hate crimes law, including gender identity. In California, a bill to prohibit housing and job discrimination against transgender people made it into law, and New Mexico and Pennsylvania put similar protections in place. Gwendolyn Ann Smith says there's more of a link between housing and jobs and hate crimes than you might think.
What ends up happening is a lot of transgender people have problems finding a place to live, finding a place to work. They end up in dangerous neighborhoods because it's the only places they can find. And it only adds to the possibility that they're going to have a problem, you know, that they're not going to be safe.
Eddie Gutierrez from the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation says that there's a lot of improvements still to be made in the coverage of transgender issues across the United States, even though the local media got a lot better in the course of reporting the Gwen Araujo story. GLAAD is continuing to work with the media to make these changes.
I hope that in future coverage of the transgender community, and if future hate crimes occur, that I think in regional areas that don't have the infrastructure or it will be their first time dealing with this issue, we learn how to describe our communities in a more effective, inclusive fashion.
At an anniversary memorial service for Gwen Araujo, sparkly butterflies decorate the stage, and local teens play a song they wrote in Gwen's honor. The memorial is taking place in the theater of Newark Memorial High School, territory that last year's drama club president, Kate Linus, knows well. 1 year after the murder that shook this town, she's thinking just as much about activism as acting. And instead of traveling the world, she's here in Newark because she says there's work to do.
It seemed like I think a year ago today up to this year, it seems like a lot has changed, but at the same time, there's a lot more to be done. And it's exciting because I think in another year, we'll be able to say that twice as much has been done, hopefully three times as much.
The same could be said for the effort to do away with hate and misunderstanding towards transgender people around the world. For This Way Out, I'm Noah Miller in Newark, California. Can't you just let people live their lives?
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Christopher Gall, Fensberry, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, and Noah Miller contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can also listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air, or for audio cassette subscription information, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. And thanks to AlternaBid and the Stonewall Society, you can still bid on some terrific items in an online auction to benefit This Way Out. Look for the This Way Out auction area at AlternaBid.com. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KFAI Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, Planet FM, Auckland, New Zealand, WRVU, Nashville, Tennessee, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please do stay tuned.